It's always good to check in with friends, see how they're doing, how they're holding up. It's always good to check in with friends when times are challenging and daunting, when climate change is going bananas, and there are hurricanes in the Pacific, and those hurricanes are hitting California, where those friends live. It's always good to check in with friends when those friends have had a long history with mental health conditions, including plenty of time in inpatient facilities, and when those friends are also smart as hell and can share a lot of the wisdom they've gleaned from the bumpy mental health road they have traveled. Friends who can articulate those experiences and do so in a really entertaining and dynamic way. It's always good to check in with friends who have lost people in their lives. It's always good to check in with friends when those friends, that friend, I'll narrow it down, when that friend happens to be one of the funniest human beings currently walking the planet. My point is that it is always, always good to check in with Maria Bamford. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. I'm always glad when Maria Bamford is here. Anywhere I can talk with her, she's just one of my favorites. Maria is a veteran stand-up comedian, many specials under her belt. She headlines all over the world. She's the creator and star of Lady Dynamite, a TV series loosely based on her own life that ran for two amazing seasons on Netflix. She also does voiceover work on billions of animated series. Maria Bamford is now an author, the author of a new memoir entitled Sure, I'll Join Your Cult. I talked with her about the book, about cults, about her late mom and dad, and about the messed up mental health care system in America. It's always good to check in with Maria Bamford. Maria Bamford, welcome to Depression Mode.
Thank you so much for having me, Depression Mode, John.
The book is Sure, I'll Join Your Cult, a memoir of mental illness and the quest to belong anywhere. The purpose of this book, how are you defining a cult? And what are some examples of cults to which you have belonged?
I'm talking about like-minded groups. So, you know, the cult can be Target shopper or all the way to Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a collective of people who have a bizarre set of beliefs that they adhere to at whatever intensity.
Right.
So I have belonged to many 12-step cults. I was also in the religion, also a cult of Episcopalianism. You know, these are looser cults, but they still fit you snugly like a diaper holding in a poop. And there's, you know, there's certain practices that you would never do. Episcopalians, I think it's not wear white before Labor Day, after Labor Day. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't wear white after Labor Day. But yeah, there's certain wealth in the North American Episcopalian community. But yes, Suzuki Violin, show business, I felt, is definitely a cult where you never know where you stand, but everyone's all in. Everyone's, for whatever reason, like, drop everything, you know?
We're all heading for doomsday together.
Like, it does, you know, you get a call at midnight. It's Disney, I gotta run! Like, there's just, so, it's very powerful.
When did you start identifying these things as cults and kind of realizing that, oh, I've been joining cult after cult my whole life? When did you put that together?
Well, I think when they asked me to have this book deal is that I said to myself, that's the punchline to one of my old jokes, is that I had a girlfriend who I used to work with, and she invited me to this group called Life Springs at the time, which is sort of a Tony Robbins offshoot type of thing where you
self-actualizing.
Yeah, people are telling a lot of stories and crying, and then they say, now we need $900 for you to go to the next level of success. Little did they know, success is the laugh of a child, which doesn't cost anything, although kids are a hard crowd. Anyways, yeah, so I went to that, and I do think 12-step programs are cults and that they are very weird. Somebody goes, oh, they just weren't willing to work the program. Yeah, of course they weren't. It's very strange. It's like pseudo-spiritual, paternalistic language, peer counseling. That's a terrible idea. I mean, it is free, and that is one thing I will say for it. It is free. And they do have that rule. In order to be a member, is that you say you're a member. You don't have to have, like, you can bring in a bottle of Jack Daniels and drink from it through the sieve of a birthday cake, and no one will say boo, but you just got to keep it down. Because someone's sharing, i.e. Doing a quick set. That was my first time seeing stand-up, was at church. Got to see a white guy have a hot take on a weird story.
The one that kind of stood out for me was Suzuki Violin.
Yes.
That's a cult that disturbing. You belong to as a child. Tell me about your experiences with that.
Well, if you have offspring, one of the best things I think that would be a part of it is that you can convince them to do things to please you at a very, very young age, so that perhaps 2 or 3 years old, let's say you get them into gymnastics or French, then all of a sudden they're 5 years old and you've got like a weirdly talented five-year-old who can do all sorts of flips and backhand springs or can speak French fluently. Mm. And that's when you move to France, unless you've already been living there, in which case
remain.
It's not that big a deal that your child speaks French. I would hope they speak French. But yes, Suzuki Violin, the whole thing I think was begun in the 50s by a Japanese man named Shinichi Suzuki. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. His theory is that Japanese is a very difficult language, and yet children learn it. And so why shouldn't children learn to do other very difficult things? Like, he didn't say Krav Maga, but violin, piano, etc. And children will learn to do difficult things when it pleases their parent, where it somehow involves survival. Because everybody wants to stand on a box and sing for Papa if it means the meals are going to keep coming. It's a theory that works. And I learned to play the violin at around 3. My mom said, you can't quit till you're 12. Well, at that point, you've got enough, you know, emotional dogs in the fight that you realize how much money your parents have put into it, how much time, how much pride. So you feel the weight of that burden. So you keep going till you're at least 21. Anyways, get your kids involved before the age of 3 in an art form, really anything, bookkeeping, and they will be weirdly good at it. Until they age out, and then you're no longer a prodigy when you're 19 and people are like, oh my God, you're really good at QuickBooks.
And if you're 19 and not a professional violinist, getting up and playing it when your parents' friends are over is more frowned upon, I think.
And nobody wants to hear that shit. No. Maybe when you're under 5, people want to hear it go, oh my God, that's crazy. But then anywhere
for
between
just a moment.
5 and 45, nobody wants to hear the violin. Nobody. Even other violinists. I have to say, it's like the guitar. Like, unless you're extremely good. Did you see the video of Joshua Bell playing in the subway of New York with a hat?
Very accomplished violinist.
Yes, no one noticed. Or looked irritated trying to get to their destination. That's how music affects people, when you bring it in front of them and go, pay attention, keep looking.
Look at me, Papa. How long did you last playing the violin? Did you make it the full 10 years?
Yeah. No, there was a lot of money riding on me. And so my parents got me a fancier violin to make sure that you really feel like it's important to spend more time alone in a practice room. And it's very confusing. Because you think your child loves what they're doing. Oh, they love it. They love designing clothes. They've done it since they were three. They love, do they? Or do they love the smile on your face when you talk about it on the phone to someone else? Mm. I think that's what they may love. That's my concern. It's too late.
It was cacophonous.
You got to get in super early so that also it's combined with love and affection. Right. My mom, physical love and affection. So my mom would take the violin and hold it with me along with the bow. And then we'd spend a half hour together. So it was combined with tender TLC until I was around six and then I was on my own. But yeah, you got to start them early with the cults. Otherwise, my husband, he was asked to join the Jehinky Winkies, Jehovah's Witnesses, at around eight, after he had found out about Christmas, after birthdays. Suddenly, they're taken all the way. No thank you. Yeah, you got to get them in early.
When my wife was very, very young, she took violin lessons, and the only way that her mom could get her to practice was to feed her French fries as she practiced the violin. So she would play and French fries would be delivered to her mouth. It was not a long-term solution, but it worked for a while.
How long did she play for?
I don't think for very long, because I think the fry model became somewhat unsustainable.
Right. And fries get cold.
They're hard to keep at the right temperature.
And then you also feel a bit logy after about 20 fries.
Right.
So, yeah, comedy, which is also, you know, cult-like, and it's, I love arguments about comedy where people start to get really mad about what's funny. That makes me laugh.
The acrimony itself makes you laugh.
Do you remember what we're talking about? We're talking about comedy jokes, people who make noises and faces. Some people are writing, not me. I did write this book.
You wrote the book, and it's beautiful. And in the book, one of the cults that you talk about is mental health itself, and the mental health, I guess, industry counts as a cult?
I think in that there are a lot of memes out there that make you feel like an idiot, you know, like, hey, you asked for help. Hey, tell someone. And
they never specify who you should tell or whether that person can do anything about it.
Where they are. BetterHelp.com. I'm sure. Do they sponsor you, John?
Not at the moment.
Not yet. Okay. All right. Well, they're not the greatest. I hope you find excellent telehealth. Telehealth, problematic, because it's not IRL F2F, in real life, face-to-face, which is the whole point of care. I had a therapist through BetterHelp who texted me, Christine, of course you're stressed. You just had a baby. Again, my name is Maria. I am a 52-year-old woman who is barren. And I get it. The therapist, she's toggling a bunch of clients at once, but that is the thing that's going to be missing in telehealth is the glazed over look in someone's eyes when they're on a screen. Also, you got to have money or the wherewithal to make these appointments. Like, what?
And the more you're suffering, the less equipped you are to navigate a system as Byzantine as the American healthcare system and the American mental healthcare system.
Oh, my Christ.
Just ahead, more with Maria Bamford on that Byzantine American healthcare system, plus advice on joining cults. If you want to start a business and make your product or service available to everyone around the world, well, you can do that because internet and websites, I bet you've heard of websites. The internet is full of websites. How am I going to build a website, though, you think? I'm not a dang web designer. I'm not a dang web developer. I'm no dang webmaster. Well, good news, I'm here to tell you that you are a dang all those things. You can build a website, an e-commerce store, a web presence, and it's not that hard thanks to Squarespace. I did it, so therefore you can do it too. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. They have this new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, where you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. You can accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay. You can upload video content, organize your video library, showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even add a paywall and sell access to your video library. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The Greatest Generation, Maximum Fun's irreverent, filthy-mouthed Star Trek podcast, is a big deal.
How big? It's the only Star Trek podcast big enough to have a live show tour, and we are inviting all Star Trek fans and Max Funsters everywhere.
We're calling it the Share Your Embarrassment Tour, where we're going to celebrate and roast Star Trek V.
That's the one where they kill God. We're going to be in a bunch of cities, and GreatestGenTour.com has all the info and ticket links.
That's GreatestGenTour.com for dates and ticketing info for the Share Your Embarrassment Tour.
Come share your embarrassment with us.
And grow stronger from the sharing.
Back with comedian Maria Bamford, and we were talking about what you got to deal with when you have a mental disorder in America today. You'll hear dogs barking in the next segment. I'm not sure whose dogs they are, but they're not your dogs. They're dogs on the recording. Don't worry.
I went to, Los Angeles. I went to the Department of Social Services yesterday with a friend about housing, emergency housing. So we went down there. We waited in the two-hour line with the Island of Misfit Toys that is America, that we're all, everybody's struggling, but there's people with kids, there are people with disabilities, there are people holding a sweet sleeping bag with some Rastafarian hair that I don't think was a choice. 2 hours to get in there, go through the metal detector. Oh my God, are we going to see someone? We see someone. Oh, it's the wrong person. You got to go to a different hall. Got to see, okay, another person. Now, my friend is extremely, she can talk a good game. Like she's good at, you know,
presents well,
etc. We finally go through the fourth, I think it was probably the fourth wall. No improvisers were there. But we saw this person who apparently was the last person who was at table eight. Table eight, let's call him John. No, not that's your name. That's terrible. I'll think of what's a more creative name? Muriel. Saw Muriel. We said, okay, she needs emergency housing. She said, we don't have any. Then we said, okay, there's nothing? And then she said, no, they do have this pilot program, but you'll have to apply through this other thing with Social Security, and then you'll have to go down to that building, blah, 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 and they'll give you $400 towards a voucher that will go towards housing in Los Angeles. Then we had a follow-up question, which was, where will they take these vouchers? And she said, ooh, I don't know. Are we on a show? Because this is so good. The buildup and then the denial of service. But I just feel like there are these things where you think, oh, yeah, you've got to go ask for help. And then you feel confused when it's either really not good help or, like, I know I went into the hospital thinking, oh, somehow maybe I went to the wrong hospital. It's like, no. It doesn't matter whether you pay a shit ton of money or if you're a county, it's not going to be good. It's going to be a holding place where you maybe won't have the access to kill yourself. That is what it will be. There may be some food and a place to lay down. But just don't feel worse if the care is a lot worse than you had planned for, you know, because there's ads where people are running in daisies, you know, or a person in a soft sweater is listening to you intently. Right. That's not happening. That's just not happening.
Right. The incompleted puzzles with pieces missing, that's standard furniture.
Yes. Yes. I had a friend who was having a mental health emergency. This was during George Floyd protests. And we went to the psychiatric emergency care on the big screen TV playing. And my friend is a black man. Was the George Floyd murder happening in real time?
Oh, my God.
Playing over and over and over again. We had to ask him, hey, can you turn fucking something else on, weirdos? Like, the cartoon channel? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Or nothing, perhaps?
Or nothing, or... And yet, I feel for those workers, because I think, how are they so out of it? What kind of pain must it be for them working in a place where they cannot or are unable to help everybody or give the level of care that they wish they could? I know the DSS person yesterday could not look us in the eye, like looked over us the whole time. I think there's some real grief in knowing you have nothing available. So anyways, it's no one's, I don't know whose fault it is. Can we find someone to blame today?
The Romans. I don't know.
The Romans. Hold on one second. I'm just going to.
As we talk here, we're talking over Zoom, and the door opened a short time ago, and a pug and then a smaller pug entered the room.
Yes. Okay. Two pugs. One is a pug chihuahua. It's Max, who is the older pug. We like an old pug. We don't like anything that has been around. We like a dog who's been around the block and really doesn't want to go around the block again. And then we have a chihuahua pug, Muffin, who is a new type of dog for us. She is 2 years old, and it is a bizarre amount of energy she has.
Right. Yeah, you like to get the dogs with miles on them.
Yeah. I like the equivalent of a 15-year-old Kia Rio.
Right. Where the odometer is rolled over at least once.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, when you've had successful mental health care, have you found that it was because of an institution that was working really well, or a doctor or therapist that was especially gifted, or was it dumb luck, or was it you and your wisdom and strength?
I think number one, lowering the bar to accessing it. So it's like, I think getting any eyes on your situation in the community, if that's people at your coffee shop, get to know everybody's names and make eye contact with them. And again, 12-step groups, which are completely, I get it why people don't like them, but they are free. So I go to those to get human connection. But it has been, I think, a lucky strike when I've gotten somebody. I had one great psychiatrist who was so lovely in the psych ward, who came in and said, he sat on my bed and he said, tell me everything from the beginning. And to tell someone who's manic, tell me everything in the beginning, is really generous. It's generous.
You're going to be there for a while, aren't you?
I tried to keep it tight. But now what I found, because I tried to see that person afterwards, and it was, you know, he's pricey. And I think that has been the real game changer, is money. I'm sad to say, on some level, I was able to get help for OCD and specific things with a chunk of change. So I currently, the therapist I have is also out of network. And yeah, I just want to say that because I think
it's important.
And it's difficult for the therapist, because I have friends who are therapists who doing the paperwork processing and all of that is crazy, and it's very difficult to see people who either don't have insurance or you don't have Medi-Cal or Medicare. And I think the terrible therapy just is memorable. It's really very funny. Have you ever seen it? What's your most terrible therapist story?
My most terrible therapist story? There was one therapist I had who might have been really good, but I might have just not been a match, where she talked about the importance of scheduling in your life, and to plan things out and to put them on a schedule. And then she had a lot to say about how she and her husband schedule sex with one another. And I'm like, okay, but some sort of, I don't know, prudishness or just unsavoriness kind of went off in me. I'm like, I don't know how I walked into your bedroom and via your day planner.
She was sponsored by Franklin Covey. yes, there's sometimes when disclosure from a therapist is comforting. We have a couples therapist, Carol Grisham, who I've spoken of on my in my work.
Dr. Carol Grisham.
Oh, she is not a doctor. She's an LMFT.
Oh, okay.
And she is a delight. And sometimes she'll share, both Scott and I have problems with anger management. Scott does some yelling. I do some, what I do is I like to threaten suicide while crying, which I thought was just kittenish. And so she will tell us tales of her own anger management problems where, well, my daughter-in-law just will not drive with me anymore because I gave this guy the finger. And she says, you don't know who has a gun. And I said, she does not seem like anybody who would ever give anybody the finger. So it is hilarious. But I totally understand that too much TMI from your therapist.
What have been, I mean, you've talked in your comedy about some less than savory therapy experiences. What are some that stand out to you as good train wrecks to talk about?
Okay. Well, first I'll say, just so we have some idea of reality, let's create a gray area. Dr. Rodney Boone, who is an OCD specialist, he was delightful. He still practices in Glendale, California. Let's give a shout out. I go to a therapist who is also an OCD specialist now, who's in South Pasadena, Dr. Anthony. Yay. Very great. Really appreciate their work. Yeah. High hopes. What I have right now is a psychiatrist he's in my network. So it is free. I think it's $20. Maybe it's $20. He texts me. We have done only text appointments for, I believe, 3 years. Wow. And because part of me doesn't care about my own body, because I know I'm on some meds where you're supposed to do blood tests every once in a while. Never asks for blood tests. He never wants to see me in person. He always says a text counts as an appointment. I'm like, all right. All right, Dr. Shaw, you crazy kookleberry.
Does he use emojis?
It's getting there.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking into seeing there's somebody, again, somebody who costs money, a psychiatric nurse practitioner who is in my neighborhood, who I hope to see. And she sounded very nice on the phone. But that's also, I have plenty of money. My parents have both died. They had generational colonial wealth. Mm. And they are dead. And I also had 2 seasons of a sitcom once. And so that means we have bought our house outright.
Nice.
And it has a pool. So I can afford to. I think it's just important to mention people money, because sometimes it's like, feels like, oh, just go ask somebody. Or I went to the GLBTQ Center for free therapy once, and it was a master's student, which that was very therapeutic in the way that she was like, what are you going to do? So you have no place to live. So you're going to live in your car? And I was like, I'm going to be fine. I got friends. I'll just call somebody. God. So in that way, it was helpful. But I also thought therapist, and I was trying to tell her about my intrusive, violent, and sexual OCD thoughts. And have you ever wrote somebody a check for $75 to call the police? I did. And police never came. Cops never showed up because it is Los Angeles.
Wait,
and
who
they
do you write
are
the
busy.
Check to?
You write it to the therapist, and because she's a mandated reporter.
I see.
She says, heads up. And is this going to clear? I just want to make sure.
Should I catch this now before the car arrives?
Before the car arrives, yeah.
Yeah. Back with more from Maria Bamford in a moment.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with comedian and author Maria Bamford. Her new album is called Crowd Pleaser. It's on all the streaming services. Here on that album, she talks about her late mother.
Yeah, my mom could squeeze joy out of an AT&T customer service call. You know, Reggie, I just got to ask you, we have been on the phone for over 3 hours. Is your phone hot? Now, I know you're in Mumbai, and I'm just going to be a curious kitty. Are you Hindu? Well, are you going to the river pilgrimage? You're going. It's called the Kumbh Mela. Kumbh Mela. Well, that's great, but it's hard. Yeah, oh, I get it. Now, we don't do Thanksgiving out of town anymore because it just gets crazy, but...
You mentioned your parents, and I met them from a distance once when we did a show together, and they were in some box seats. But I feel like I know both of them already from all the talking that you've done about them, and they've both passed in recent years.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you're doing.
Yeah, it's just so sad. I mean, I think like anybody has felt over just, it's just sucks, you know? My mom died of lung cancer about 4 years ago, and she was kind of the hub to all activities in our family and connection and love and fun and good times. And then, so that blew. And then my dad kind of, he really did his best. He went to all the therapies and I went to go see the grief group, and then I went to, and I've been volunteering, and I asked out every woman in my age range. He was 82. He met this woman named Mary, who was wonderful. They dated for about a year. It was just great. And then he got some sort of, and I've heard this is sort of a thing, sort of a depression/anorexia, where he kept getting worried about gaining weight or just kept eating less and less. And, you know, we would get really mad at him about it. Just like, hey, you've got to eat. And he just kept getting thinner. And he's about, I think, about 125, 130 pounds, like 5'10". And then... he got COVID, and he just died within 48 hours. And my dad was always had depression, and so I wonder if part of it was that, just feeling like he could, because that was heartbreaking when he went to the hospital. He had fallen over in the house, and when I came back to the house, the book he had open was The Mindful Way Through Depression by Jon Kabat-Zinn, which don't do it. Don't mindfully go through depression. There's no reason. Knock yourself out with a hammer. Like, there is absolutely no reason to feel all the feels of depression. I don't know if you've ever been on the razor's edge, wanting to exist because you've been in such a sense of suffering, but you don't need to also pay attention to it.
Yeah, it kind of makes itself known already, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
With the loss of your dad or with the loss of your mom, did you have any setbacks to your own mental health because of the grief?
I'm on meds, so I think it was the normal amount of grief that most people would have. And I wasn't completely taken out of the game. And yeah, I didn't think, I really, when my mom died, I just thought, oh, there's no way I could make it without her. And then of course you do. And that was surprising. And she told me that she had been a hospice person and she had lost her own parents. So she was like, honey, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine, kiddo. And I was like, huh, okay. And she was right. I take meds, so things are pretty steady. And I think I feel the level of an appropriate level of sadness, and definitely, I think some of the things where it's like I try to some of my go-tos when I feel anxious or OCD things like trying to control things, or like whether that's my weight, that's the cult of thin, where it's like, oh, there's some perfect number. There's a number out there and it doesn't matter what it is. Is it the number? Was that it? I don't know now. Like I find they do that with finances too. Like finances, like, is that a good number? Is it not a good number?
And the difference between the good number and the bad number can be like four or five, a very small number between them too.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that new app, Noom, where monstrous. They have you weigh yourself every day. That's the thing they try to get you off. You're not supposed to do that, right. To keep yourself from being, getting eating disorder. Yeah, yeah. It's just, I put on a quarter pound. Well, and then they put a psychological thing with it, like going like, notice what did you? It's like, nobody needs to be looking into their phone thinking about a quarter pound. Like, am I sounding grumpy?
No, you're sounding insightful.
I'm so sorry.
And Noom has never been a sponsor of our show, so that one's pretty comfortable on that one. So, with your career, with comedy, with acting and voice work and all that you do, do you feel like you are an active member of that cult, or are you just, it's just your job and you stand outside the cult?
I love being a part of it. I am definitely, I'm in.
You've got the robes. You're at the compound.
I don't want to follow any of the rules, especially if somebody told me what the rules were. I immediately need to question them. And I like to mock things from within something. Mm. So it's not a great trait. Nobody really wants me on the team, but I like to, including in all my relationships, I go, what is what's suspect about our friendship? it's not a great quality, but I love to be included. Oh my God, invite me to anything. I wonder if that might be a possible shortcut to getting a little bounce in your oxytocin if you join a cult, an actual cult, for just a week. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you get into Scientology, just a week, but go all in. Like, go all in. You're going to every seminar, every day. You take all the tests. You get all, pay $6,000 a day to get all your levels done as quickly as possible. Then pull out abruptly. Pull out completely. that might give you, light your brain on fire with just a sense of danger. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just suggesting this. I'm not a professional psychiatric nor psychological counselor.
You're just advocating that people join Scientology for just a little while.
Scientology or whatever, Baptists. I think Baptists are very, if you get in for just 1 week, you go to all the potlucks. You go Wednesday night. That's another thing Baptists do. They go on Wednesday night. Wow. You try to get on all the groups. Just all in and then pull out.
Then gone.
Yeah, it's like, just like that Top Gun scene where it's like you're going to, or what is it, the Star Wars scene when they say, oh, they're going to hit the Death Star. And then
that's Star Wars, yeah.
It's that feeling of relief and joy that you're not in a cult anymore.
Can you be in comedy without buying into it on a cult-like level?
Yes!
I mean, okay. I know you say you're not. That you're fully in, but can others do that? Is that a possibility?
Yes. Okay. Now, Los Angeles, New York, there are open mics every night of the week. But wherever you live, whatever burg, I can pretty much guarantee you if it's over 50,000, you have at least one open mic a week. Now, whether that's music or not, that's going to be a problem. But sometimes music, what that means is those gosh darn musicians, instead of giving each other a time limit, they say two songs. And then one of the songs is Old Man River. And then the other one is, what's the one that's so long? Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Freebird?
Freebird. Freebird. So choose wisely. But yeah, you go all in. You can do stand-up. I think there's Zoom open mics every night of the week at every time of day worldwide. So English-speaking open mics, I'll Google it if you don't want to. And just get into it. Get into it. Because you only get 3 minutes, but then you start worrying about it almost all the time. You only get 3 minutes of time for your material. And material can be anything. It can be you reading a letter. It can be you just mumbling. Don't create barriers for yourself of what stand-up is or is not. Mm. You start going to these shows. You go seven, as many times as you can in 1 week. Then you stop abruptly. Well, number one, everyone's going to ask where you went. Number two, you're going to feel the withdrawal. You're going to say, I miss hearing that rhymed act that I heard out of Alabama that was not only misogynist, but body positive. What? You just hear so many wonderful things. And that's what I think any religion does or any new set of beliefs does. Yeah, get into, like a gym. Join a gym that's really upbeat. Aren't there some gyms?
For a week and then drop out?
Yeah, for a week and then drop out.
Okay.
Yeah, if you get really into it and then learn everybody's names in the gym, take, as many classes as you can a day, and talk it up. Start talking it up, oh my God, this is so great. I'm really going to do something. My body is, I'm changing it into, I'm becoming a bear. And then stop. These are just ideas, John. Yeah. They haven't been tried. They haven't been play tested. They haven't been double blinded, studied. Yeah. Is that
with
the
control
thing?
Group?
Yeah. With a control group.
Yeah. I can confirm, by the way, yes, lots of Zoom open mics.
I go to one every week with my friend Vance.
Oh, yeah?
It's an open mic of love. And it's usually about 12 of us who are on there. And
there are tons and tons, it looks like.
Oh, I love it. See? God, I love it. Also, 12-step programs. So many, every single kind of 12-step program you've ever wanted to go to and not wanted to go to. You can lurk in the background Mm. And sometimes they'll ask you just to make sure that you're not a Zoom bomber. But usually you don't even have to identify yourself. Just say, I'm here to listen. You can enjoy all different kinds of stories of obsessions that you've never even thought to have.
So it sounds like you kind of endorse the idea of a controlled cult membership. Like perhaps not diving in irretrievably for the rest of your life.
No, of course not. I mean, and this is the best thing they say. This is a cult saying of 12-step groups. Take what you want, leave the rest. And then sometimes people kind of are nag on you in those groups, as groups always do. There's always a shaming process where someone will go, oh, you're not really working the steps. You're not really working. Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm here for the snacks. Who's dumb now? Who's the idiot? You know, like I'm poolside in all these programs. I'm on a lounge chair with my feet barely skimming the water.
Right. I've got a cocktail. It may be a mocktail depending on the group that I'm sitting in on.
Yeah. Oh my God. Have you ever ordered I was at an Overeaters Anonymous meeting where somebody came in with McDonald's and the confusion that erupted. It was so wonderful.
Ugh. Wow. Did they just sit there and eat it during the meeting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then there was so much like, well, we want to be welcoming, you know, that sort of, you've got to be welcoming to the person. And this is what they're coming for, is that they cannot stop, you know, whatever it is,
right,
chowing down. And so, hey, fair enough.
Fair enough.
If you could dip the fries in the shake a little more quietly.
The fries while you play the violin. The book is Sure I'll Join Your Cult. The author is Maria Bamford. She also has a new special that you can hear on streaming services called Crowd Pleaser, which is incredibly delightful. As is Maria. Maria, thank you again, as always.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me, General. And yes, thank you.
Maria Bamford's book, Sure, I'll Join Your Cult, comes out on September 5th and is available for pre-order now. Her new comedy album, Crowd Pleaser, is available on streaming platforms right now. Next time on Depression Mode, emotions are tricky things. Families are tricky things. Emotions in families? Oh boy.
We're the kind of family that, like, if someone's bored, it's a reason to be mad at them. They're, like, not trying hard enough. And I always assumed that what I was experiencing was boredom, and I just needed to find a way to entertain myself. And I realized, you know, when I got older, that I was just deeply sad. That's what it was.
Why does that make you laugh?
I don't know, because it's awkward.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Lydia Lovelace joins us. If people donate to the show, we can have a show. If they don't, if they stop their memberships, then the show goes away. Let's not make the show go away. Let's keep hanging out with wonderful people and learning things. It's easy to donate if you haven't already done so. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you and select Depression Mode from the list of shows. If you have already done so, thank you for your support. We have a merchandise store. We have t-shirts, mugs. We have Depression Mode sweatpants, which is always funny to me. It's at maxfunstore.com. That's maxfunstore.com. You can sort by show. You can find all of our Depression Mode merchandise, and it makes a wonderful gift to show that you care and are insightful. Be sure to hit subscribe, give us 5 stars, write rave reviews. That helps people find the show. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7 in the United States for free by calling 988. The Crisis Text Line, also free and always available. Text HOME to 741-741. Our Instagram and Twitter are both at DepreshPod. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. You can search that up on Substack. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at John Moe. Our electric mail address, depressionmode@maximumfun.org. Hi, Credits listeners. If you're looking to get more sleep, which is good for mental health, be sure to check out my other show on the Maximum Fun Network, Sleeping with Celebrities. We got celebrities who put you to sleep. It's very restful. Depression Mode is made possible by your contributions. The show is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
This is Joni from Toronto. I just want to say, if you're here, you are not alone. There are so many of us in this boat. And I am so glad that if we have to be in this boat, at least we're all in it together. So glad you're here. Stand fast.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network.
Of artists-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.